Good day, everyone, and welcome to the Friday, August 9th edition of Money Matters, the program all about money, earning it, saving it, spending it, and investing it. My name is Jeff Eisman, and today I'll be reading from a recent edition of Money Magazine, as well as a few articles from a recent edition of Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine. The first article is from the retirement section of Money, and the headline, though, is a little seemingly out of sync with that topic, because it's such a young person who's giving out the advice. The headline reads, "Meet the record-setting Olympian who's now a certified financial planner for broke millennials. Here's her playbook for success." It's an article that was written by Elizabeth O'Brien of the Money Staff. Lauren Williams had plenty of wins during her athletic career. She became the first American woman to earn a medal at both the Summer and Winter Olympics, scoring a gold in the 4x100-meter relay in London in 2012 and a silver in the two-woman bobsled in Sochi, Russia, 2 years later. Still, she says, her losses were what helped her fuel her post-retirement success as the owner of a financial planning firm in Houston. "Being able to gracefully handle loss and dust yourself off is a good skill to have," says Williams, who's now 35. Her resilience has helped her persist through the challenges of building a business from scratch. These include passing the certified financial planner exam and attracting new clients through her speeches and other community outreach. Her business, Worth Winning, will turn 3 in April and has just become profitable. Williams has carved a niche for herself, helping her millennial peers tackle their student debt, adopt sound budgeting practices, and start saving for retirement. "They're young professionals trying to figure out what adulting means," she says. "Investing for retirement is crucial," Williams says, "but before you jump into the stock market, you need to lay a solid financial foundation. Here are her key building blocks for smart money management. First, own your mistakes. Williams finds that many clients want to sweep their money mistakes under the rug, but she encourages them to face their past head on. "Okay, I made a mistake," she says. "Now what?" If you don't openly acknowledge what went wrong and forgive yourself for it, then it's harder to learn from that mistake, she says. Williams speaks from experience. She turned pro in track and field at the age of 20, making more than $200,000 a year. It was a lot more money than anyone in her family had ever made. One of her eight siblings, she was raised by two entrepreneur parents who split up when she was 3 years old. Her father became sick with leukemia and was unable to work for years before he died in 2008 when she was 25. "I knew there were responsible things to do with money, but I didn't know what they were," she says. Over a stretch of years, she hired and fired two financial advisors after they got her into inappropriate investments and failed to help her the way she wanted. It was a lot of, "Don't worry your pretty little head about it. You just keep racing," she says. "I felt very disorganized with finances, and they seemed kind of shady." She began researching the financial planning profession and decided to become an advisor herself after she retired from her athletic career in 2014. She failed the first time she took the exam to become a certified financial planner, a rigorous optional designation that indicates competency in a broad range of financial planning concepts. "I didn't realize it was more like the bar exam," she says, "an endeavor whose preparations consume students for months on end." So she redoubled her efforts and passed the second time around in early 2017. Second tip from our friend here is, budget for emergencies. "Before you can save for retirement, you need to understand your cash flow," says Williams, "and that involves making a budget." She's a fan of the financial planning software You Need a Budget, or YNAB. Many of her clients live paycheck to paycheck, juggling both credit card debt and student loans. Budgeting helps them recognize how much they're spending on eating out and cell phone bills, two expense categories that are ripe for cutting, she says. She also helps them understand their options when it comes to student loans. For example, many aren't aware of income-driven repayment plans in which monthly federal loan payments can be capped at a percentage of your income. The next step is creating an emergency fund. She recommends that young professionals hold 3 to 6 months' worth of take-home pay in their emergency pot and advises athletes to hold 6 months to a year. Without such a cushion, it's easy to rack up credit card debt if faced with an unexpected bill for, say, a car repair or a medical procedure. Thirdly, she recommends start saving for retirement as early as possible. Retirement isn't even on the radar for many of her young clients. She'll ask about their plans for life after work and get blank stares in response. To prod them to consider it, she'll ask how their parents are approaching that life stage. With the groundwork laid, it's time to look at clients' investment options for their retirement savings. Some clients are professional athletes without access to a company 401k, and she helps them set up a SEP IRA or a solo 401k. She recently wrote a guidebook to becoming a professional track and field athlete. Helping fellow athletes is a particularly rewarding part of her job, says Williams. It feels good getting them on the right track and not getting into the situation I was in. And then they have a inset here of other information by which Williams seems to subscribe to. And it's headlined, "This common 401k oversight could cost you big time in retirement." Williams helps clients become mindful of their money. A key part of the process is making sure you're saving enough in your 401k instead of coasting on autopilot in that important account. The good news is that more workers are signing up for 401k plans than ever, thanks to a rise in the number of employers using auto-enrollment programs. This simply means that you are automatically signed up for your company's 401k plan when you start working, and the money is deducted from your paycheck and deposited into your retirement account without your lifting a finger. Nearly 70% of big companies in 2017 auto-enrolled workers in their 401k plans, up from just 58% back in 2015. Secondly, low savings rates. The bad news is that most auto-enroll programs set the default contribution rate very low, at about 3% of your pay, and most workers stick with that instead of proactively raising it on their own. Less than 10% of workers who were auto-enrolled in their 401k manually increased their contribution rate in 2018. Financial advisors, meanwhile, recommend saving at least 10% of your pay over your 40-year career for a shot at comfortable retirement. Many recommend closer to 15% if possible, including any company match. You don't have to get to that level right away as long as you steadily work your way up to it. If your company has a match, contribute at least the minimum amount to get a full match in your 401k, says Blair DeQuesnay, a financial planner at Ritholtz Wealth Management. The average employer match is 4.1%. Every plan is structured differently, but generally you have to contribute a certain baseline to be eligible for the match. If you do that automatically before you ever receive your first paycheck, it's almost as if you're tricking yourself. You're never going to see that money, so you're never going to miss spending it. Thirdly, start higher. The roughly 9% of auto-enrolled workers who manually increased their 401k contribution rate last year excludes those with an auto-increase function on their accounts. Also, that 9% captures the activity for 2018 alone, so it's possible some in that group hiked their rate before then. Just like many companies automatically enroll workers in their retirement plan, some also put their contribution increase on autopilot, bumping up workers' savings rate by 1% percentage point each year. At that pace, it's still going to take you many years to get to the 10 or 15% if you start at just 3. So if you've let your 401k savings rate stagnate, or if you've never even investigated what it is in the first place, now is the time to give it a much-needed boost. And you'll thank yourself for that, for doing that later on down the line. It's more common for people to think that they can't afford it and be happily surprised that they can, says Katie Taylor, Vice President of Thought Leadership at Fidelity. So some recommendation there too on 401ks, always something that's recommended. Okay, switching gears here, we have another article. Here's how to save $1 million by 65 years old based on how old you are now. Harness the power of compound interest by starting to save as early as possible. This is an article by Alex Langone of the Money Staff in the Savings Strategies section of the magazine. It's never too early to start putting money away for retirement if you want to brag about your millionaire status to your future pickleball partners. Indeed, unless you hit the jackpot or sign with a major sports franchise, accumulating a seven-figure retirement account will take decades of saving. If you wait until you're 35 to start investing your savings in the stock market, to become a millionaire by 65, you will have to save more than double the amount you would have needed to sock it away if you had started at 25, according to analysis by For Money by David Blanchett, head of retirement research at Morningstar Investment Management. Assuming an 8% return on stocks, which is kind of shaky, a 4% return on bonds, and accounting for an inflation rate of 2%, the least you can save to become a millionaire is $306 a month if you start when you're 20 and you plan to retire at 65. Of course, few people can start quite that early, but if you save $444 every month beginning at age 25, you will hit your goal within 40 years. You can invest in stock mutual funds through your company 401k if you have one, and if not, in an IRA you open yourself. Many young people are tempted to put off saving, feeling as if they should erase their student debt first. But financial advisors say that to become a millionaire by age 65, you need to tackle both goals at once, saving and paying off debt. To be sure, there's plenty of evidence that even $1 million won't be enough to sustain a retirement of several decades. But it's more than most Americans have saved up, and it's a good number to aim for as a kind of rough minimum goal. You'll have to make serious sacrifices if you wait until you're in your 40s. You'll need to save $1,396 every month beginning at age 40 to break that six-figure ceiling by 65 years old. If you're starting late, you can boost your savings by taking up a second job, slashing your expenses, or both. But playing catch-up can only get you so far. You need to stash away a whopping $6,055 a month if you wait to start saving just a decade before you retire. That would be at age 55, according to this. And they give a sliding scale here of the amounts that we talked about mostly in the article itself. But at age 20, it's only $306 a month to make it to $1 million by 65. If you start at age 25, just $444 a month. If you wait 5 more years till age 30, it's $645 a month. 35 at $942 a month. 40, $1,396 a month. 45, a whopping $2,126 a month. If you wait until you're 50, it's $3,406, and that almost doubles in 5 more years at 55, as we said, at $6,055 a month. Lots of money to have to put away. Okay, and that brings us to the last of our articles here from the Money magazine, and it's also in the investment section, but it's under the heading of Keeping Costs Down, How to Simplify Investments and Boost Returns. Fight Portfolio Sprawl with These Tips. And it's an article by Sergey Klebnikov of the Money Staff. Investing can often seem complicated, but it doesn't have to be. In fact, when it comes to managing your portfolio, a streamlined approach with few funds and fewer accounts can help you make the most of your money and could even boost your returns, says Morningstar Director of Personal Finance Christine Benz. Benz, who recently published a report on fighting what she calls portfolio sprawl, says decluttering your investments can be one of the easiest ways to improve your finances. That's especially true for older workers and those nearing retirement, since they've had the most time to collect extra baggage, she says. Sprawl is a problem because it makes it hard to keep tabs on what's in your portfolio, not to mention your asset allocation across different accounts, she says. It just requires so much more oversight than is ideal. We interviewed Benz to talk about this challenge, and here are three steps to success that she recommends. First, consolidate accounts. For most investors, your 401k is tied to your employer. That means after you've switched jobs several times, you're likely to end up with several of these accounts. This can make it harder to keep track of your savings and can push up costs unless you consolidate the accounts into an IRA or your current employer's 401k. If you don't love your current 401k, an IRA may be your best bet. Not only is an IRA not tied to your job, it typically offers a far greater range of investment choices, including ETFs, mutual funds, and stocks, says Benz. Consolidating can also lower your costs by enabling you to qualify for fund share classes with lower expense ratios. Still, it's important to remember that you can take account consolidation only so far, she says. For instance, if you're currently employed and contributing to a 401k, you're not going to be able to roll those savings into an IRA until you leave your job. What's more, there is no way for life partners or married couples to combine their accounts. You have to keep them separate. The second tip that she gives for simplifying your investments is use total market funds. Ben's next tip is construct your portfolio around total market index funds, now sold by most large firms, including Fidelity, BlackRock, Vanguard, and Schwab. These funds offer both convenience and a lower price. It's impossible to beat the expense ratios on broad market index funds, she says. The three core areas you want to focus on are total U.S. stock market, total international market, and total U.S. bond market indexes. Another portfolio option is a target date fund, which holds a mix of stocks and bonds that grows more conservatively as you age and can be a super efficient way to save for retirement, she says. Of course, if you plan on consolidating your holdings, don't overlook taxes. In taxable accounts, selling fund shares that have appreciated in value likely means recognizing a taxable gain, even if you immediately reinvest the money. In tax-advantaged accounts like 401ks and IRAs, capital gains are not an issue. And thirdly, for consolidation's sake, she says, don't overlook cash. Finally, turn your attention to cash. Default options like brokerage sweep accounts can have notoriously low yields, says Benz. Instead, check out what's available from online savings accounts. Among the best available rates, according to Money's annual Best Bank survey, accounts at Marcus by Goldman Sachs and Synchrony, which each offer a savings rate of 2.25%. In contrast, brick-and-mortar banks offer savings rates as low as just 0.1%, according to Best Bank's database. Another good option is putting money into CDs, especially if you're looking for a low-risk cash account for retirement. Banks such as Ally and Barclays offer some of the highest rates around, almost 3% for a 12-month maturity. You just want to make sure you're not letting your money lie fallow, she says. It pays to be discerning and to be aware. I think that's pretty good advice. Okay, moving on to the Kiplinger's magazine now for a couple of articles in our time left. And the first article is, it's the cover story, and it is How to Make $1 Million or More What these success stories have in common is passion and persistence, and a vision for what their wealth can achieve. It's an article by Sandra Block, Eileen Ambrose, and Patricia Mertz Eswine of the Kiplinger staff. Christina Stemble didn't just bend the traditional business model for flower companies, she snipped it in half. Stemble grew up on a farm in Bremen, Indiana, so it's tempting to say that she found farm girl flowers to get back to her roots. But the real inspiration for her business came while she was working as an event planner near San Francisco in the mid-2000s. Tasked with cutting expenses, Stemble, who's 41, looked for ways to reduce the costs of floral arrangements, which she thought were overpriced and underwhelming. She started ordering directly from local growers, who led her down a rabbit hole of research into the business of flowers. She concluded that the e-commerce side of the industry was ripe for disruption because a lot of people, particularly young ones, weren't satisfied with the floral arrangements they found online. Younger consumers were purchasing far less often than previous generations for the same reason I hated sending my mom flowers. They didn't like what was out there, she says. You spend an hour sorting through options on websites to find the least ugly option. Which shouldn't be the thing you say about flowers, she says. So Stemble's idea, instead of adopting the model of the big flower companies' websites, which offer everything from red roses to Asiatic lilies, she would sell only one arrangement that changes daily, based on what's in season. Stemble launched Farm Girl Flowers in 2010 with $49,000 in savings. In 2015, just 5 years later, the company started taking orders outside the Bay Area, relying primarily on social media and word of mouth to drive traffic to its website. Last year, annual revenues topped $23 million. Stemble now has more than 100 employees, including on-staff bicycle and car couriers who deliver locally, and she plans to establish 6 distribution centers throughout the United States, which will expand the business and reduce shipping costs. The most successful entrepreneurs scale up with an eye toward selling to a larger company, and that's what Stemble envisions for her enterprise. Right now, she's investing most of her money in the business. She pays herself just $50,000 a year and lives in a 1-bedroom apartment with her husband, Neil, so she can expand as quickly as possible over the next years or so. At that point, she'd like to sell the company and use the proceeds, along with everything she's learned, to launch another venture. Taking a great idea or a special skill and parlaying it into a successful business is only one route to riches. Among the people featured here in this article, one couple earned their first million by buying rental properties, and another amassed 7 figures and retired early through a combination of saving and smart investing. So let's move on to the real estate investors. As a student paying his way through college at Eastern Kentucky University, Jason Rector got tired of paying rent. Every time I wrote the rent check, the landlord's net worth was going up and mine was going down, he says. That motivated Rector to buy his first house. It was 2006, before the housing crash, but properties in Richmond, Kentucky were affordable. He bought a 3-bedroom, 2-bathroom home for $117,000 with just $4,100 down payment, using savings from the mowing business he ran while he was in high school. Rector finished the basement himself, adding 2 more bedrooms and another bathroom, and invited 4 friends to rent from him. That paid his mortgage and expenses while he lived rent-free. The next summer, he bought a second house for just $135,000. His younger brothers, who followed him to college at Eastern Kentucky, lived in and managed the houses after Rector returned to his hometown of Champaign, Illinois. Back home, Rector began his career as a firefighter, but he had caught the real estate bug, and he kept buying. Today, Rector, who's just 34, owns and manages 93 rental properties, with an 8-figure total value. Rector says his wife, Lisa, 33, is a big key to his success. She's a real estate agent with Keller Williams and a top agent in her market. She helps find properties that they can buy for 10 to 20% below market value, mostly apartment houses and single-family homes near the campus of the University of Illinois. The homes may be torn up or dated, or they could be in foreclosure or short sales. Lisa negotiates the deals, and then Jason improves the properties. Jason says that since the down payment on the first house, he hasn't put a cent of his own money into the business. When he's ready to buy, he taps his line of credit to pay the purchase price plus the cost of renovation. When he rents out the property, he takes the lease to the bank, and the banker orders a new appraisal. Based on the new value of the property and anticipated rental income, Jason takes out a new 15-year commercial mortgage. He uses the loan proceeds to replenish the line of credit and pays down the loan with the rent he collects. So that's a second plan. And quickly here we have a third, the financial planner. Jennifer Myers may have picked one of the worst times in recent history to launch her financial planning business. Myers, who's 47, started SageVest Wealth Management in 2007, just as the U.S. was on the verge of an economic meltdown. People were scared of advisors and the market in general, let alone working with a relatively new and small company, she says. Clients who signed on with her needed a lot of hand-holding to get through what was an extremely harrowing time. Myers says her business began to grow, however, as the economy recovered and investments she made during the downturn paid off. When she started her firm in McLean, Virginia, she had about $40 million in assets from clients she brought with her from a wealth management firm. Today, she manages about $200 million. She's a fee-only planner who charges between 0.5% and 1% of assets for financial planning and investment management. As her business has grown, she's been able to hire two other financial advisors and a director of client services, and she is preparing to add another advisor to her team. Myers, a certified financial planner, put herself through college and earned an MBA from George Washington University. She worked as a partner with a wealth management firm for 10 years before launching her own business, and during that time, she saved about half her income. That allowed me to get through a lean period, she says. So, three different ways of turning into successful entrepreneurs, it seems here. One through financial planning, one through real estate, and one through the flower business. Well, that brings us to the end of our time today. As usual, we thank you for listening, and you can reach us here at WRRS with any comments or questions. Our number is 513-487-4245. This has been Jeff Eisman for Money Matters. Thanks for listening. I hope you have a great weekend.